Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of January 29th. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined on the program by Asad. Asad, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you to finally be going out to get dinner with the Eddie's group?
Yeah, yo, Eddie's thing at Hemdy's because we're not going to Eddie's anymore because Sasha couldn't make it.
But Sasha couldn't make this one either.
And then he failed anyways. Yeah, and he bailed anyway.
He double
bailed. First he got it moved, and then he bailed.
You know what, though? I'm happy he moved it, because now I can get there by TTC, so I'm good. I'm going to take that 37 Islington bus.
Look, I don't care. I'm going to show up to Hemdy's, and I'm ordering a Manchurian chicken chow mein anyways.
They're not going to have it, man. All they're going to have for you is, like, I don't know. I've actually never had Somali food, so I don't really know what they're going to have, but yeah. Shouts to VTech.
I haven't had a banana all day, so I'm pretty hyped.
Yo, listen, we're going to have banana in like six different stages of ripening, all right?
Yo, that's the motive. We'll go.
Yeah, that's really the motive. We are here to talk about another week in Raptors basketball. Honestly, these weeks are starting to blend in together. Like, we kind of know what the Raptors are good at. We know what they're not necessarily good at. And I mean, we're recording this on Sunday before the Lakers game. Presumably, they're going to take care of the Lakers. Presumably, the only good player in the Lakers, Kyle Kuzma, probably went out drinking with DeLon Wright and stuff.
Is this game in L.A. or Toronto?
It's in Toronto.
It's Toronto, right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's over, bro. It's at 6 p.m. in Toronto. They probably could have had a double dip today, this morning. But, yeah, I mean, whatever. We shouldn't have any issues. But then again, we thought we wouldn't have that many issues with Utah as well. And that, you know, it wasn't necessarily an upsetting or frustrating loss. It was just annoying that they blew a late lead, and that sort of became the topic of conversation for the moment. And, you know, like, look, there's not a lot of things to complain about with this team whatsoever. They're deep. They have two stars, and they run their plays well, and they have continuity. They know what they're doing. But, you know, honestly, the only thing you could really pick at right now is the crunch time thing, which so far the Raptors this season haven't been great in crunch time. They're 23rd in net rating, 23rd in offensive rating. Their rebounding goes in the tank. It's just, they've had some issues in crunch time. They're like 30th, in 3-point attempt rate, and like 30th or 29th in assists. So all of it is just bad numbers. The offense doesn't look good. We all know this. And, I don't know. Asad, let me just get your thoughts on, do you think the Raptors have an issue with crunch time? And if so, should they do something differently?
Yeah, they probably do. But like, my feeling is the games that end up going to crunch time are the games that they're just not playing well, like, for the entire course of the game.
Okay.
So, like, that skews it for me a little bit. Because, like, games where you're already not going to be in rhythm and the shots aren't falling, those are the ones that end up falling into crunch time. So, like, your numbers are going to be worse. As we know, the Raptors' offense, when they hit less than 10 threes, their record's trash. Like, this has been the case really for the last 3 years, is anytime the Raptors aren't hitting threes, they're really basically useless on offense. Like, their offense goes to crap because there's just no spacing and no reason for the defense to really space out and give them opportunities. So the one, like, concern I have with all this crunch time offense analysis is, like, we haven't, like, how many games have we had where crunch time was necessary in a game where, like, both teams were cooking offensively? Like, it usually doesn't happen. So, yes, it's an issue where it's like, okay, in the playoffs, we can't just trust our offense to be cooking. And, like, yes, in crunch time, we fall into these, like, old habits. Mm-hmm. Where it's these iso ball, whatever it might be. But at the same time, those are usually games where, like, we ran our offense for the first three quarters and it hasn't been working well. So it's hard to actually trust it. And that's something they can work on. Like, KC had his quotes this week, which are really promising, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, there's no assumptions as in, oh, no, no, we know what we're doing. We got a good shot. It's going to work. It's more like, no, we know this is a problem and we're working towards it becoming, you know, running our motion offense, getting into our sets, trusting it. JV taking open corner threes.
Yo, I was not with him on that one. That one was wild. He was like,
"Here's the thing."
Wait,
my whole thing is like, that's the process behind that's great. Like,
the fact that they're approaching,
the fact that they're approaching it with no egos,
mm-hmm.
where they're like, "Oh yeah, we're fucking up, so let's fix it." Like, there's got to be a better way to do it, whatever the case might be. That's promising because, like, this Raptor team at the same time, like in previous seasons, we've also been around the same type of record this year. Like, we're clearly better off than we've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
But usually by this time this year, this is where we're sitting at. And a lot of times we end up getting fat and lazy and we get happy with what we're at. But this year it's like, no, instead of being happy at where you're at, it's kind of like, no, we're continually working towards the playoffs and getting a playoff offense ready. I think the one thing that's promising to see is like from top to bottom, nobody's really playing for the regular season. They're really just trying to focus, like the focus whenever you hear quotes has been, how to get prepared for the playoffs. And it's been in a positive manner.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, yeah, because look, the Raptors in previous years, whether it was because, which is not to say like these are negative things that like shouldn't happen, but like whether it was players trying to establish themselves and like get contracts, or you know, in the case of Lou Williams, or in the case of Lowry and DeRozan, like them trying to establish themselves as stars and going for the All-Star game, and you know, trying to become a starter or be voted in as a reserve, or whether it's Dwayne Casey's job is on the, not on the line necessarily, but you know, he's coming into a walk year in his contract, and you know, they need to get X number of wins or whatever. Like, you know, like the regular season has been a big thing for the Raptors in the past. And like this year, like you said, man, like they're from the get go, the focus has not necessarily been on the regular season. In terms of results, it's been about the process. And you know, I think the Raptors have, for the most part, stuck to those things. I liked everything Dwayne Casey said after that Jazz game, which, you know, the Jazz game wasn't a debacle or anything like that. It's just like, look, the Jazz played really good offense. They just played really solid throughout the game. And yes, the Raptors had a 6-point lead with like 2 minutes left, and they kind of blew it because, you know, Lowry made a bunch of bad decisions. Like,
they had a 6-point lead?
They had a unblowable, man. There's no way you could possibly blow a 6-point lead. Yeah, I mean, it happens, but like, yeah, I mean, look, I liked everything Casey said, because, you know, he didn't let it go. It was just like a, look, this is just something that happened, whatever, like, DeMar makes our shot 99 times out of 100. I kind of hate when he says that, because I feel like that's like the default thing he says, and it's just like, no, you know, honestly, we should focus on, first off, when is crunch time? When do you get into those like stagnant offensive sets where you want to control the possession into one shot, whatever? Like, that is absolutely a thing that happens, and sometimes strategically viable. But you know, when does crunch time start? And in terms of the role players, you know, how much are they deferring to the main players? And then also the main players, how much are you looking for everyone else and trusting that? And I think, you know, this season for the most part, they have two strategies in terms of in crunch time, in terms of just like main plays that they're running, and they both involve DeRozan getting open in the mid-range, which, you know, comes and goes. Like, it happens. It's not necessarily a great shot, but that's where he's most comfortable, and he's your best scorer. So, let me just ask you, do you have any issues, like, watching throughout the year, like, with the Raptors in terms of what sets they're running, sort of the pace they're running it, and, you know, just generally what they're doing in crunch time offensively?
Kind of, maybe not. I don't mind the looks. Like, there've been a lot of looks where it's like they don't go in, but I feel like they haven't, none of the looks, like, they haven't executed the timing on them right. Mm-hmm. I forget which game it was where, they ran that, Lowry for DeMar, screen on the other side of the floor, mm-hmm. with DeLon up top, and they just timed it fucking
Brooklyn.
Brutally.
Brooklyn.
Yeah, they won the game, but got into it so late where it was like, man, really? Like, I didn't even mind the play call because it was fine. But, like, it was like, man, like, y'all got into, like, 2 seconds too late. Like, what is someone supposed to do there?
Exactly. There's, like, 7 seconds left. Lowry inbounds the ball to DeLon Wright of the middle of the floor. DeLon's not doing shit, obviously. Like, come on. Yeah. It's DeLon Wright.
They had 10 seconds. It did 10 seconds to start that one.
Yeah.
They inbounded. Lowry kind of ran, like, some fake screen bullcrap on the other side of the floor, then ran to the other side to set the screen for DeMar, which is just weird.
It is.
So I was like, okay, but other than that, like, I haven't terribly minded the looks. Like, I feel we've gotten good looks, and clutch time offense, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it's, like, there's so few possessions, so you, like, it's very, like, the variance is really high whether or not you have success or failure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the same sense, the Raptors could run those same plays, and if two or three of those games the shot just drops instead of rimming out, it's like, oh, their crunch time offense is like middle of the pack or top of the league or some nonsense.
Yeah,
so it's a little iffy
uh-huh.
in terms of data set, because how many crunch time games are the Raptors?
It's only like 84 minutes, man, total all year.
Yeah,
crunch time, and like the thing is, like, if you look at last year, like, they were like one of the best.
Exactly.
Of course, so, like, the roster changed, but the process was pretty much still the same. Lowry or DeRozan was taking a shot. with the same plays.
Which isn't even, like, here's the thing that pisses me off. People are like, oh, crunch time, our offense is so dumb. Why are, well, it's always just Lowry DeRozan doing something. It's like, man, like, what other team do you see doing other stuff in crunch time? Like, the Warriors got into crunch time last time in, against Boston. It literally was just Steph do something.
Yeah.
And that then Steph did something, and it worked out. Or, like, you watch Houston, their crunch time offense is, hey, James Harden, Chris Paul, do something.
Yo, here's the thing. Everyone talks about how, like, Houston, like, is so modernistic or whatever. Houston's offense...
Houston runs the same stuff we do, just that they jack up more threes from further away.
Yeah, also, Houston is, like, the bulk of their offense is isolation. It's really just James Harden dances on somebody and shoots. James Harden averages, like, 8 isolation points a game. And so does Chris Paul. Like, the two of them just isolate a lot. Whether they get a screen involved, they get a mismatch, whatever, but... I mean, I think that the key there is, like, at some point you reach the bottom line and, you know, you have this player taking the final shot for you, or you have another player, and sometimes it's DeMar DeRozan, who, you know, is a good shot maker, but not exactly elite. And then or sometimes you have Steph, or you have, you know, James Harden, or you have Chris Paul, you know, I think at some point you reach that bottom line and what you get is what you get. I think the Raptors could probably run some more creative stuff. Like Dwayne Casey said, like, look, everyone knows where we're going. We, you know, like, DeRozan's the first option, Lowry's the second option, but he was saying how, like, you know, the Raptors could do a better job of disguising how they get to those sets and how they get to the same outcomes. And yeah, that's obviously the challenge of the coaching staff, both him and Nick Nurse, to come up with plays and for the players to execute that. But I mean, ultimately, what are you really gonna do, right? What are you really gonna
do? You know what I want to see teams start practicing?
Yeah.
Like, teams across the league should start practicing this, but I think the Raptors, like, yo, you throw Bebe out there. Say you have, like, 10 seconds, 15 seconds left on the clock. It's a half-court inbounds.
Mm-hmm.
And you run that Phoenix crap that they did with Tyson Chandler. Like, you'd run that with 15 seconds on the clock where you just throw it right at the rim
mm-hmm.
and let Bebe tip it in. Because there's no offensive goaltending. Like, just abuse the shit out of it because they're going to change the rule for next year anyways.
Mm.
But, like...
Wait, what happened with Phoenix? I must have missed this.
Oh, so like a month ago, so Jay Triano apparently has had this play. He found out this loophole in the rule where it's like on an inbound, there's no offensive goaltending.
Okay.
Because the ball isn't live until you touch it.
Uh-huh.
So basically it was like Phoenix had like a second left on the clock. They were down by one
uh-huh.
and they were inbounding from half. And he told Tyson, he's like, Tyson, I've been waiting for 20 years to break this shit out because I found this loophole.
Tyson, I drew this play up originally for Lauren Woods.
Yeah. So he's like, Tyson, he told, I forgot who was the inbounder. He was like, yo, throw the ball at the rim as if you're shooting it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if it's above the cylinder, it's fine. Tyson, just as soon as it's above the rim, just drop it in the net.
Okay.
So basically, you shoot a shot from half court,
mm-hmm.
like, as if it's, like, for it to go in, and you just get someone to tip it in last minute. It's not an offensive goaltend. It's a live call, and it totally counts.
It's off the inbound?
Because the ball isn't... Yeah, off the inbound.
That's brilliant. I don't know how no one's thought about this before.
Start to tip and it's not an offensive goaltend. You can't have an offensive goaltend on a inbound.
Wow, this means we can finally run a play for JV.
Memphis was like, what the fuck? And they just ran out the court. That's why I was like, man, like, they're going to fix the rule for next year, but it's like, yo, like, every team should have this in their play. Like, I would do it off of every single half-court inbound.
That's pretty funny, man. I don't know why anyone's tried this.
Because that way it forces you to collapse on the guy going down to the rim no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And, like, Bebe's long as shit. Like, that could be his only purpose. He's, like, the 15-second master.
That's already basically what he's doing. Yeah, but, I mean, look, I mean, in terms of, aside from, like, trick plays, I mean, is there anything else that... you would like to see, like, for example, like, a game like that Utah game, right? Like, I mean, I know the advantage of Lowry screening for DeRozan and whatever. They have great, like, timing and whatever, and Lowry's a very clever screener and whatever. But, and, you know, it doesn't really bring a crowd because it generally involves the two smallest defenders on the one and the two. But, you know, in a game where JV's really rolling or he's kind of dominated his matchup for that night, like, I wouldn't mind involving DeRozan, you know, attacking with that JV, rolling to the rim. Because, like, you know, sometimes it's just not the case.
Yeah, that wouldn't be right. I think one of the things I haven't seen in our clutch offense at all is, like, quick hit plays. Like, say we got 15 seconds left,
mm-hmm.
and we're down two, it's always a play where we get the guy the ball at like around half on the way out.
Yeah.
And he takes a couple dribbles to set up his defender while everyone spaces out, and then they attack. But like instead, like just get like a quick hit play. Like you see Boston does it a lot, or San Antonio will do it a lot, where it's like as soon as the ball handler gets, he just attacks the rim.
Right.
On the backpedaling defense. And you just go for a layup right away. So it's like a 3 second score rather than like a 7-8 second play.
I think the key there is that like a lot of other teams are willing to involve their shooters. You know what I mean? Like for the Raptors, it feels like they have a number one option like everyone else does, and a second and a third option. But that number one option, the gap between that option and the third option is so large that the ball is almost always going to go towards DeRozan. It is just is what it is. Whereas like if you look at a team like Miami, where you know it's a team full of average players, it's to above average, but none of them are exceptional and doesn't really stand out above the pack, they will run a play for Wayne Ellington in the corner. You know, I mean, obviously he was a third option there, but they're not afraid to inbound to him the way that like the Raptors would be afraid to inbound the ball to Ibaka. Which, by the way, Ibaka's in all these clutch games. I'm like, I've never seen Ibaka take a clutch shot. Like, what is Ibaka like? Does it, like all these 3-point shooters is just so funny to me because like every time they put out Fred or they put out like CJ Miles or Serge, I'm like, you're not getting the ball. Why?
Yeah.
Why? Like, again, the Utah game, you know, they had Serge in the opposite corner with DeRozan going towards strong side. And Gobert, who's the only big on the floor, he was guarding Serge. Gobert was just like, nah, I don't need to guard Serge. They're not passing it to him. They're not taking a three, even if it's wide open. And he went over double DeMar, and DeMar took the shot, you know, because DeMar is going to take the shot. So, do you think DeMar yells Kobe?
Remember? Nah, bro. Look, yo, when I take shots at the office, when I'm just trying to throw stuff in the garbage can, I say Debo.
Wow. That's real.
Dog. Like, yo, like when I'm at pickup and I do a little sidestep mid-range jumper, Debo, no Kobe.
How's that not a travel? Can you explain the footwork there?
Yo, it has to do with the gather. So it's kind of like if you put the dribble down as you do it.
Okay.
And then you do the pickup as you're doing the hop to the right, then it's not a travel.
True.
Because it's part of the gather. But, like, yo, but, it's like, you have to time it right.
Because I'm seeing, like...
But it looks like a fucking travel.
It looks like a travel, right? Like, he's holding the ball, and, like, sometimes he doesn't even dribble. He just, like, jumps to the side with 2 feet. I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Whatever, I'm not complaining. Ever since he pulled that jump shot out last year, like, I feel like last year was the year he really debuted it. Like, during that, like, stretch to start the year where you're scoring 30 every game. Because,
like him and Harden just decided to – both of them broke it out that same season. Last year, they both broke out that sidestep with the extra hop. And I was like, oh, what the hell is this?
Yeah, Harden does it a lot, too.
Also, yo, that Harden three-step travel. So I've watched that video, like, 4 times. And I realize it's the camera angle that makes it look off. Because if you see it from the front angle, the thing is that first – like, the first step he does in those three
–
he doesn't have the ball in his hand, so he throw it like so. You can pull it off. You throw down a cut dribble, make the first step before you gather. So then, as you hop off the first step, you gather the ball, which is already live in a dribble, and then you get another 2 steps, which is pretty dope. I can't time it, but it's a pretty dope move if you can pull it off.
True. Shout out to the LeBron crab dribble. That was like a whole that determined a whole series.
Doc, LeBron legit takes 5. Like I was, yo, I love how he's like, oh, it's a crab dribble, man. It's like, no, bro, you took 5 steps.
Yo, he just made
also,
that term up,
to
too.
Shout out to the time LeBron tried to do the Kobe off the backboard move, and he messed it up and took 5 steps.
Oh, Kobe, man. No, I'm kidding. 24 greater than 23.
5 greater than 3.
Yeah,
five
I love it. Look, the crunch time thing is just like, you know what the Raptors do a really good job of? I think this is why it's frustrating, in part, because the Raptors, I believe, in something like 75% of games, the Raptors take a 10-point lead. That's nuts. Like, even the Utah game, they led by 10 in the third quarter. Like, part of the issue is the Raptors are so good at building leads, and they're so good at making comebacks, too. They just, like, when they get to crunch time, they just can't hold the lead. I think that's the more impressive part.
I'll be honest, I want to look at stats across the league, though. Because I feel like a 10-point lead isn't as valuable
it was before. You mentioned this. But I'm just saying,
three-point rate's up. So, like, I think, like, you got to adjust it for what the average point per possession is in now versus 5 years ago. It just looks like it's a big lead, but I don't think it really matters.
How much does point per possession really change? Like, it's probably like 1.09 right now, where it was like probably, you know, just 1 point 5 years ago. It doesn't change.
Yeah, but the number of possessions has gone up, right?
So yeah, but I mean, like, it's like eight per game. You know?
Yeah, but point per possession's gone up, and like possessions per game has gone up.
Yeah, I hear.
But I don't think it. But I think it also just matters on, like, if you go on a run, but you're shooting threes rather than twos.
Yeah.
So you say, like, before, in a five shot, in a five possession spread, you'd take four twos and one three, and you make eight, like, four of those buckets, right? Whatever the mix be. Versus now you're taking five possessions, and in those you're taking three threes and two twos, and you make four of those, right?
Yeah.
Like, in a run, it's just because you get hot and you're making shots, but it matters on what the shot mix is. So I think because the overall shot mix has changed, like, that's why runs can be more volatile now.
That's true.
Than ever.
That's true. I also think
that's why it's like, oh, they blew a double-digit lead. It's like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal anymore, man. I feel like teams around the league, like, blow double-digit leads like nothing now because of this.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, still, if you, it's still a good indicator that the Raptors are, you know, they have, like, a dominant, not even a dominant feel, but they have control of a game, in most games. Like, they take control at some point. Obviously, if you take control in the first half, it doesn't really matter. Like, second half, unless you're, like, up 30.
I think one of the things that helps the Raptors, and it's a positive note, is, and it's a lot of good teams have this, is not only being able to get stops, but being able to get a stop and a bucket. So that you turn your stops into offense, and that's what changes you from being like a team like Utah, which just needs to get stops to survive, versus like a good team, which will get a stop, but then come back and get a bucket on you. So they turn every stop into an advantage.
True. I mean, do you feel like the crunch time thing is like an area they can fix with the current roster, or like, do you even see it as a big issue, to be honest, altogether? Or do you just see it as like, you know, it's mostly variance for now? And based on the
personnel, I don't think Raptors are ever going to be like, I feel like just because the Raptors top talent, like, we're never going to be elite. Like, the fact of the matter is, we're not going to be better in, like, when it comes, if it's a close game versus a team like, say, even if you're playing Boston or if you're playing Cleveland or you're playing Golden State or Houston and it's a close game in crunch time, you're probably giving those teams the advantage just because they have the better top tier guy.
Yeah, I agree.
But that said, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. Like, I feel like we can have a good crunch time offense. Like, I don't think that we can be stopped in this. Like, I feel like we have the personnel to have a hot, like a top 15, top 10 crunch time offense. I just feel like we can be outgunned in crunch time.
Definitely.
But like, that's just the nature of it. That's why you have to leverage the team's advantages, which is like, we can play a better 48 minutes than you can. Like, the first 46, 45 minutes, we'll play better than you, and then hope that we can hang on the last 3 minutes.
That's pretty much how the Raptors do it.
Just leveraging the strengths of your team.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. The other thing I want to talk to you about recently is that JV has played really well. Like, really well. Like,
he's in, like, the best shape. He's in the best shape he's been in, like, ever.
He's looking svelte. He's looking happy.
He's moving well. He doesn't seem like he's hesitant on the ankle anymore.
He's calm.
He can just kind of turn off of a roll.
I mean,
he's got, like, slightly better hands.
It's not bad. Yeah, I mean, seriously, in the month of January, JV is averaging 13 and 10, which is like what he normally does, but he's shooting 60% from the floor. He's making half of his threes, which is kind of wild. He's been better at blocking shots at the rim, which has been good. I think his like defense at the rim this year has legitimately been better, than previous years, like a lot better. It's just that like he still doesn't really do well as like a, you know, in a pick and roll setting where he has to move his feet as much. But for the most part, within his role, JV has pretty much excelled and done everything, you would want from him. First off, do you think this is like something that's permanent? Like, do you think this is like, he's really taking a step forward? And then also, do you think JV can thrive while Ibaka thrives? Because Ibaka has kind of taken a step back during this time JV has been on. And when you recall in December, JV wasn't as good, and then Ibaka was on, you know?
Yeah. I think It definitely can, because Ibaka thriving has nothing to do with any of the other players. It just has to do with, is his shot going down or not? Are his knees 38 or 27 that day? So, like, what do you, like, Ibaka's been shooting like crap. Obviously, he's playing like crap. Like, that has nothing to do with any other player on the court other than Ibaka. Like, because the shots are still open. They're still open.
I don't know, man. I feel like they can get him some more mid-range shots. But his jumper has just not looked good of late, generally.
No, like, so even his mid-range, blame anyone else. Like, whether he's shooting the mid-range, I think one adjustment I've seen teams make on defense is now when we run the pick and roll with Ibaka, they guard him for the pop instead of leaving him, like, blanketly wide open.
That was weird. I'm like, you guys know Ibaka can shoot, right? Like, come on, just watch some game
tape. The thing was,
he
started out, like, he shot, like, great percentage last year. And, like, this year he started out shooting, like, 40% and took, like, 3 months for teams to decide, hey, maybe we shouldn't leave him open. It would be, like, open by, like, 8 feet. Like, there'd be no one near him. I was like, how is he this open?
I feel like the defense can really just focus on one of the two of them. And so if as long as one of JV or Ibaka is going, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
For the most part, right? Like, I look at their production almost in a combined setting. Obviously, they do different things. And if Ibaka's playing well, you can close games more comfortably with him because you can feel more comfortable with, like, who's defending behind that. Because, like, you can tell, like, the rest of the team doesn't really fully trust JV. Like,
the big problem, the only thing that really, like, this is, like, outside of a team concept, is just with JV is, like, refs are just, like, they're willing to call a foul on JV. He gets zero benefit of doubt. Because, like, the dude just picks up fouls for literally no reason half the time. Like, half the games, it'll be like, he'll be on fire. Oh, he got his third foul. Why? Oh, offense. The amount of illegal screen calls they give JV and Pirtle is just straight racism.
Yo, seriously though, I think they look at JV and they're like, "Oh, that's Pirtle. We gotta get Pirtle his eighth foul of the game." Like, no, seriously though, the two of them, you're right. Like, they pick up fouls like crazy, and like, come on, man, JV's been established. Like, whatever. It's not even like sometimes it's like, okay, all right, well, look. He looks kind of awkward. He's going to the rim. This year, he's just not as awkward when he's doing stuff. Like, he's more composed. He still looks slightly awkward as compared to the average player, but I don't know. I have no complaints about JV right now.
No, well,
it's almost disturbing to me. My brand is ruined.
He looks settled on offense, where it's like he knows if he catches in this spot, this is what he's got to do.
Right.
Like, he's figured out what decisions he has to make, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now I don't know what'll happen if, like, teams decide to, like, double him right off the catch on a pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has to make a really quick decision because that's probably going to happen in the playoffs where they start doubling him from, like, the lower block or whatever where he can't see that on a catch.
Mm.
But we'll see when that happens, it'll happen. But, like, the one thing is he looks like he knows what decision he needs to make. He's moving as fast as his head's thinking. Like, this is the fastest we've seen JV move at all. Like, he's, like, I know ankle injuries take a while, and he did put on a little weight last season. He was bulkier for sure.
Mm.
So he slimmed down this season, and even remember, before he rolled his ankle, he was playing well.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season, too. He was playing just as well. Then he rolled his ankle. It took a couple of months to gain confidence again with it, and now he seems to be back in that mode. So I think as long as he stays healthy ankle-wise, it should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is probably the as good as he's going to get. Like, this is peak JV, I think.
No, this is definitely peak JV. And it's great.
Like, he's passable defensively.
Yeah.
And then offensively, he's just a monster for 20 minutes.
He's having his Enes Kanter resurgence.
Yeah.
Because, like, these players are useful.
Enes Kanter, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. Enes, part of the thing with Enes is just, like, we know he's not good, but sometimes he balls out. Whereas with JV, I'm not, like, convinced he's not good. I just know where his weaknesses are. But I think overall, he's still
a nice player. The thing that JV has legitimate size, right? He's legitimately a big dude.
Yes.
So there's just inherent value in that. So I like JV. I don't mind it. He's good.
JV's fine, man. The Hive is another thing altogether. But I'm really encouraged what JV's doing. Do you believe in the 3-point shot? Do you, like, when he shoots it, do you trust it?
Yeah, man, I trust it. It's a good shot.
Would you trust it in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
No, come on.
If
we lose a game with JV taking a third.
If he's guarded, like, he's not going to shoot that off the dribble or guard it. Okay, but, like, if he has 6 to 8 feet of room, catch and just shoot that thing. Because, his stroke looks good. Are you telling me his stroke looks any worse than Pascal Siakam's?
No, not at all, man.
And Siakam's allowed to shoot? Does his stroke... Yo, JV's jump...
No.
JV probably has one of the nicer jump shots on the team. in terms of like.
Yeah, but we've talked about this. The Raptors are a team of collectively ugly looking shooters. Like, all the shots look bad.
CJ Miles looks like a freaking, like, he looks like it's a shot put sling. Like, he's literally just chucking it.
Yeah. No, but that shot is pure, though. That shot is really pure.
I like JV's shot. It's not too bad. And yeah. I'd rather, like, here's the thing. If you catch it, mm-hmm. and you're 8 feet open, and it's under 14 seconds on the clock, just shoot.
No, because the defense is, like, basically what happens with JV is that, like, they're so used to him, like, going into the middle of the paint that, like, the defense just stops thinking for a while. They're like, all right, JV's in the screen. I mean, it's the big man's dropping back. Yep. And so JV's just like, nah, I'll just stay here and take two steps back while you take two steps in. And at that point, I'm wide open.
Like, I don't want him spotting up for threes, but when they do trap the ball handlers on the side
mm-hmm.
and they have to reset up top,
yeah.
If JV gets that, there's 13 seconds left on the clock, he's got 8 feet of room, no hesitation, take that shot, that's fine.
Yeah, and again, look, this is also goes to the development point, right? Like, because, you know, this is something that Dwayne Casey's been saying for 2 years. He keeps saying it, and, like, no one believes it, and also JV doesn't shoot it. But, like, you know, he said all along, like, pretty much dating back to the summer of 2016, he was like, yeah, man, JV, you know, he's going to be trying to become the modern center, and he's going to take some more threes, and... You know, it's coming to fruition. It's nice. He even had someone close out on him in the Jazz game. Jarebko saw that there was a European guy open, so he had to go close out. And JV drove by and then dunked on him. It was great.
Jonas on Jonas crime, baby.
Yeah, man. In terms of other issues with the Raptors, I mean, I don't really know. Like, yeah.
Also, yo, when Jonas drives, as long as he can get his first step and step and a half off without losing the ball,
mm-hmm.
then he's good. Like, he gets that first step and step and a half, and he gets under the elbow on the drive, then I'm like, yes, it's good. This is going to be muddy.
Mm.
It's just like, please pull off that first step and a half, two steps, because those look like the most, like, those, like, he's trying to charge up the run. He's got, like, high knee kicks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never get used to how JV moves in like, a day-to-day scenario. He just moves weirdly. Chucking. Yeah, yeah, but I mean, he's been effective, man. There's nothing else to say, really. The broadcast has been hard to watch sometimes because I'm convinced that Matt Devlin is his father. Like, Matt Devlin treats Jonas like he is his son. Like, just like uncontested rebound. Oh, what a board by JV.
Quick shout out to Matt and Leo being like, top five disrespectful moment was the Atlanta game and them just pulling out the golf voices.
Yeah, man, that was from like the second quarter onwards, man. They did not have any respect for these guys. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know what? It's weird though, cause like, of late, this has kind of been the Raptors' worst stretch of the season. We have lost 5 of our last 9. This is the worst stretch, and the losses have been by 1 point against the Heat. by 2 points against the Warriors. 6 points against the Sixers, 6 points against the Timberwolves, and 4 points against the Jazz. This is the Raptors' worst stretch of the season. Every single game has been a one possession game.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping they pick it up because, like, every season, of course, I predict 60 wins.
Yeah, of course.
And right now they got to go like 28-7 to get it, which looks a little tight, but. It's also like they've already gotten a bad stretch out of the way, so maybe they can like make this like a 16-6 to close out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If they go 12-2,
ooh.
But yeah, we'll see. I wanna hope that they have like they probably have an easy piece of schedule coming up at some point.
Yeah, they have a long homestand. Well, bisected by one game, but yeah, we'll talk about that right now. The Raptors are playing the Lakers later tonight. We're gonna assume that's a win.
Guaranteed win. I just realized that the Lakers young guys probably can't drink or go to strip clubs in the States.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, like, it's money. Like, where do you think? Saturday night, Kennedy's was packed.
Yo, Slender Man was out there. I love these young Lakers, man. I don't know about you aside, but I'm in on these Lakers.
I like it's not bad.
I like Kuzma. I don't know if he's Frieza, like you said.
Oh, he's Frieza, bro. 100% Frieza.
Okay. But, I mean, like, Ingram is coming around. Like, Ingram can do things. You know what I mean? Like, he's shown the ability to do things. He still does some bad things, but as soon as you pair those things out, you get him to focus on what he does well, he's going to be a good player. Like, I don't really have any doubt about it. And also, like, Lonzo's coming around, man. Plus, just, like, been less hype. Like, Honestly, LeVar going overseas, like, it really did help kind of quiet the storm.
Also, Lonzo got hurt for 2 weeks, which helps. Like, Lonzo's been out of the lineup for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like nobody cares game to game anymore.
That is true, actually. That is true. They really don't win without Lonzo. It's kind of wild. Anyway.
Also, take this in that, like, Markelle Fultz still hasn't played a game.
No one talks about this. Markelle Fultz hasn't played three games all year, didn't take any jumpers. He's out here, like, trying a new shot. Yo, honestly, how are they letting him shoot before reporters?
Yo, it's wild. Yo, actually, just a quick shout to this. I felt like Markelle Fultz the other day. So, like, usually, like, I tore my elbow up, like, 5 years ago. Mm. So now I basically can't play basketball without having this, like, really tight elbow guard on my my shooting arm.
Okay.
Because otherwise I hyperextend. So anyways, I forgot to put the clothes in the dryer before ball. So I couldn't wear it.
Wow.
So I had to, like, do a makeshift one. So I went to ball and I literally could not shoot. Like every shot, I did not know what my form was going to be. Damn. I didn't hit rim for like 5 runs in a row. And I'm like, this is what Markelle Fultz feels like. Damn. This is the worst feeling in my life.
You Markelle.
Like, yo, imagine Siakam, waking up one day and not being able to do the one thing you've done your entire life.
Yeah. No, but apparently Markelle, like, he changed his shot in the offseason and stuff. But this is, the whole thing is just so crazy to me. Like Brian Colangelo, I mean, what are you doing? Like, just tell him, like, listen. This is the last year, all right? We're going with TJ McConnell. He's playing well. Jared Bayless, you look like an egghead. We're trying to get a point guard as we speak. But this is just it for the season, all right? Markelle, he's just got to get his mind right. That's it. He'll come back next year. He'll be good.
Like, yo, I feel like I think they're going to screw up Markelle the same way they did Okafor.
Dude, look.
Where it's kind of like, you got a young guy. You didn't let him develop right in the first year. Mm-hmm. And then you just say, ah, screw him. We got other young guys. Because that's what legit with Okafor, like, it's not like he's an absolute trash player. They were just legit like, oh, we got Embiid now, so screw you.
Pretty much. But, like, you know, if you look at, like, with Fultz, like, it can't be a good thing that every single time there's all these reporters being like, here's a video of him shooting a free throw, and it looks like he's, like a dolphin with, like, fins trying to throw the ball at the rim.
But, yo, think about it realistically. Why would Fultz be part of the Sixers' long-term plan? Like, outside of him being a trade asset, why? Like,
he's not a trade asset at the moment.
Like, no, but that's the thing. Ben Simmons is your point guard now, right?
To be honest, honestly, a guy like TJ McConnell kind of fits their core a little bit better.
Yeah, so it's kind of like,
because they have so many, like, playmaking forwards. Like, even Sarge.
They legit don't need a Markelle Fultz. Like, it would be nice if he was a great player, but they don't need him. They're not going to make him the center of their development.
I mean, they need a perimeter scorer.
So it's
kind of
like they're just going to waste the first-round pick.
Plus, they're going to get LeBron, so.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, it would be the same as if Markelle Fultz was drafted by the Warriors. Yeah. What would he do on that team?
Probably become a Splash Cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Splash Triplet.
So, like, that kind of sucks that he has no, like, there's no reason for the Philly to really focus on his development, because I think they already have their core in place.
True.
And to make him the core of their development would mean taking away possessions from Point Simmons, which is not what, they're not going to do that, so what's the point?
But I feel like it's the same thing with Milwaukee, right? Like, Milwaukee, like, that's the same argument against Jabari, but, like,
because they're not, yo, they're not doing anything with Jabari, and they're not going to.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if they're
like,
going to re-sign
Jabari.
Really,
they're Jabari. Just going to wait till Jabari gets healthy enough that they can play him enough and then see if he works with Giannis. It's not going to work. And they're going to trade him when he's averaging 25
but
and 5.
But they can't, though, because he's going to be not here before the All-Star break. And then this is his last year of his restricted contract, you know?
Yeah, well, they're going to re-sign him to something.
Hopefully. Hopefully. If I were Jabari, I'd take out, right?
They're capped out.
I'd just take the...
They've got to be capped out, right?
Yes, they are. It's a very expensive team.
They're going to bring him back.
Very mediocre. Yeah. All right, let's just preview the week's games. The Raptors play the Timberwolves on Tuesday at home.
Is it on Tuesday?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game. I'm going to that game.
Oh, man, that's an L. If Jimmy Butler's healthy, it's an L.
Yeah, that's true. Jimmy
Butler. Yo, we can't beat Jimmy Butler, man.
We really can't, man.
He's literally incredible.
He broke one of Michael Jordan's records against us. He broke Michael Jordan record. He scored 40 and a half.
Also, I want to see what Wiggins' record is in Toronto.
Wiggins.
Because I feel like Wiggins just, like, Wiggins is the guy who balls out whenever someone calls him out or whenever he knows he's got eyes watching him.
Yeah, but otherwise he's just Gerald Henderson.
Like, the one time I remember when he was in, when he was, like, the number one, he was number one coming out of high school,
mm-hmm.
and someone on ESPN reported that he was overrated or some crap. Oh, no, it was after, undefeated Mr., what's his name? God damn it. The guy with the hat.
Whitlock. Jason Whitlock. Yeah,
some nonsense, right? Because I think, was that in college? Or was, oh, no, that was a college one. No, okay. So when he was in high school, someone on ESPN wrote something about him being overrated. And then he was at a game, a prep school game, and the crowd started chanting overrated, and he dropped 56 on their ass.
Yeah, that sounds like Wiggins, man. He's motivated. Yeah, like, listen, when Masai brings Wiggins...
It's also why every time he plays Cleveland, he fucking drops 30 on them.
Exactly. Yo, when Masai brings Wiggins and Giannis to Toronto, it's going to be beautiful, man. 2020, watch. Or 2022, yo, I guess.
FVV, Andrew Wiggins, and Giannis is going to be the core, man.
I'm down. Yeah, I agree with you. That's going to be a tough game. I'm not optimistic. I think the Raptors will be in every game that they play at home, for sure, regardless of the opponent. But, yeah, that one's tough. And plus, Minnesota's playing well right now. So, let's give them the win. Raptors, on Thursday, travel to Washington to play the Wizards.
That one's a win.
That's a win.
That's a definite win.
Yeah.
Is that – that's pre-All-Star game too, right?
Yeah.
Ah, man, that's so tough.
Not enough is said about the fact that John Wall and Bradley Beal are so miserable to be around that there was that quote from Gortat earlier this year where he's like, yeah, I'm retiring after this year. Like, nobody even asked him. He went to the reporters himself to be like, I'm retiring this year. And he would like to go back to the Magic before he retires. Like, he's like, nope, I don't want to play here. I don't want to go to the All-Star game. I don't want to go to the playoffs. I don't want to play with John Wall. I want to go to the Magic, who have lost, like, their last 30 games in a row. Yeah, oh, Gortat is hilarious, man. And also, shout out to John Wall for being angry that Otto Porter makes the max and also that Otto Porter didn't come to his Halloween party. What a team. What a team. But yeah, it's going to be close. We always play Washington close, but I have confidence in that one.
I feel it's going to be a win.
Yeah.
I feel like, yo, do we always play Washington just before the All-Star game? Because I remember 2 years ago was Lowry versus Wall where Lowry outran him.
Oh,
for the full length of court for layup and messed up his elbow.
Lowry destroyed his body doing that.
Exactly. Then he put up a 9 at the 3-point contest.
Yo, Kyle.
My favorite thing was, shot like, before 9. He went up, I was like, yo, let me tweet something out just to reverse jinx it. I'm like, yo, Kyle Lowry about to drop a 9. Just watch.
I thought he dropped a 9. I thought Kyle Lowry shot 6. I'm going to look that up, but 6 points in... Three-point contest.
I thought it was 9. I just watched it the other day. 9.
He had 9? 9's not that bad. Actually, with the money ball, 9 is really bad.
The money ball, 9's trash. He made 6 shots, I think.
Oh, wait, hold on. Kyle Lowry finishes dead last in 3-point contest in the Toronto Sun. Ooh, the second time was not the charm for Lowry. But he's not counting on a third. Oh my god. Oh, good lord.
Yo, not enough's made of the fact that I think it was like one season, it was like 2008, 2009, or 2010, when Kobe said he was going to take part in the 3-point contest at like the height of his powers as a 35% 3-point shooter. He's like, I'm getting in the 3-point contest.
Yo, I don't know.
And I remember it was like Rip Hamilton was just like, nah, man, that motherfucker ain't winning shit.
Yo, I don't know if this is just bad reporting, but. Or if it's just Lowry was that bad, but they didn't even say Lowry's score. All they said was he airballed the first one after going right over the basket and never did find a rhythm after that.
Dude, he airballed the first one and then hit the second one, like wide over the basket. It skimmed the other side of the rim.
Oh man. Kyle, baby. National TV Kyle is one of the worst players in the league. Anyway, the Raptors play. The next day after the Washington game, they play the Portland Trailblazers at home. Portland is okay. I don't know. I like when we play Portland, actually.
Oh, we're going to beat Portland. Portland can't freaking play us.
Yeah, the back-to-back's not so bad.
God, we held Portland to 2 points in a quarter.
That's true, and it was an Evan Turner layup. It was like a putback. A putback by Sid the
Sloth. It was like 30 seconds left in the quarter.
Yeah. And then the Raptors wrap up the week on Sunday, 12 p.m., a very early start against the Memphis Grizzlies.
A 12 p.m. game?
Yeah, I know.
Those are back. Is this in Memphis?
It's on CBC. No, it's in Toronto.
What the hell?
Yeah, it's Chandler Parsons is still going to be in bed.
Yeah, we're winning that game. Like, yeah. Dude, what? Memphis lost.
You still want Tyreek, though, right?
Yo, man, I don't know. Yo.
Pitch Tyreek right here. Well, that's, so, yeah, 3-1 week for the Raptors. We're going to go to break, but before we do that, Asad's going to pitch us on Tyreek Evans.
Yo, listen, Tyreek Evans, So, like, I saw it on Twitter a little bit. People were talking about, yo, Tyreek Evans, trade deadline. No big reporters talking about it, but just, like, small guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
As trade deadline.
He's obvious trade candidate.
So, in my head, I was like, oh, Tyreek's probably having a good season. He's probably, like, has 15 points, like 5 rebounds, maybe, like, 2 assists something on, mm-hmm. like, 45% shooting. Right. This dude is putting up 25-4 on 50% shooting.
He's at 5-5 now.
He's at 5-5, 25-5 on 50% field goal and 40% three.
No, 45% from the field and 40% from three.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like shooting's like 57, right?
It's legit right now. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's wild. He's putting up starter stats, and he's
mind. His true shooting is 56%.
Yeah. So that's he's basically bad. Kyle Lowry.
Come on, man! How dare you? Kyle Lowry's still at like 60%. Or maybe not after that Jazz game where he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
5
like,
points.
Yo, and he's cut, like, I was like, wow, that's a ridiculous stack for Tyreek, who's like really cheap to get for any team. Like, I was like, yo, if the Cavs could get him, like, if you're the Cavs, why wouldn't you go for Tyreek? Because you probably get him for literally nothing.
The last thing the Cavs need is someone who takes a lot of shots, man. Come on. The Cavs need a hustle rebounder guy. That's it.
The Cavs need somebody who's under 35.
Yeah. Tyreek is 28. His usage rate this year is 28%. It's higher than Marc Gasol's.
Yeah.
Wow, Wayne Selden is third in usage on that team, huh?
Mm. Dog, that team is so trash.
Whew. Wayne Selden. Ben McLemore. Oh, my God.
Yo, legit.
Yo,
legit,
shout out to
Mike Conley. Mike Conley saw the roster sheet, and he was like, dog, I'm not balling with these guys. Yo, my heel hurts, bro.
Mike Conley was like, listen, I played through that, like, nasty, pus-filled eye one time, but I'm not playing with Jarrell Martin. I'm not playing with Deonta Davis. Oh, DeLon Brooks. Stay safe out there, DeLon. Come home. Come
Conley
home
comes us. Into the gym one day. He's like, yo, hold up. You're not demoting me to the G League. No, this is the roster, Mike.
He's like, yo, but seriously. I was at the G League showcase, and I saw Jal Hollinger. First off, this guy dresses like a professor for, like, a community college. Like, it's like his wardrobe is still from, like, you know, 1996. But look at the players that they built, all right? Wayne Selden, Chalmers, Ben McLemore, Ivan Rabb, Jamichael Green, who people
Ivan
want to
Rabb?
Re-sign. Yeah, Ivan Rabb. Mike Henry, the Mike is with a Y instead of an I. Andrew Harrison, Jarrell Martin, Deonta Davis, Brandon Wright, DeLon Brooks. No slander to DeLon.
Wait, is that the Brandon, like the Dallas Brandon Wright, the one who had like the 36 PR?
Yeah, the two A's, Brandon. Yeah. He looks weird.
Nah.
His middle name is Keith.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. You know, honestly, Keith is a very important name. You gotta keep it in your name for sure. You gotta keep that lineage in your name. Gotta keep that Keith. But
shout out to Keith Scott. Rest in peace.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side. Asad and I will answer your Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Is your insurance company forcing you to go back to work when your doctors say you can't? If this sounds familiar, look no further than my law firm. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. Still here with Asad. We're taking your Twitter questions. As always, hit us up at Raptors Republic. First one comes from Francis. I saw on Reddit that if DeMar averages 20 or more points for the next 5 years, he will get a call into the Hall of Fame. Long story short, what can DeMar do to make it to the Hall of Fame? I believe he could become one first ballot. #bold, but not really. It's pretty bold, man. It's pretty bold. All right. Look, as of right now, DeMar's not going to the Hall of Fame. However...
Oh, no, DeMar's going to the Hall of Fame.
DeMar's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yo, like, have you looked at what the Hall of Fame credentials are? Like, if DeMar has 3 more seasons like this, he's in the Hall of Fame.
What?
Yeah, because his totals will be there, man.
It's not like baseball. It's not like it's 500 home runs or whatever automatically gets you in, man. Like,
yo, who's the worst stats compared to Vince Carter on a career basis?
But Vince Carter was, like, relevant. In a way that DeMar was never, you know? And, like, that's what these things...
Are you saying DeMar's not relevant right now?
Oh, man. All right, let me just put my Ben Golliver hat on, all right? When you look at the modern NBA, what team would take a mid-range shooting gunslinger over a guy like Chris Middleton, who'll give you elite three-point defense, and also... DeMar's not that relevant right now. Unfortunately.
You dropped 52 on Chris Middleton, bro. Fuck Chris Middleton.
Yo, Chris Middleton... We're going to be seeing Chris Middleton at MD soon. Yeah, I don't know, man. I doubt it.
DeMar's gonna get all NBA this year. If he does a similar season the next, like, two more seasons of this, he's gonna get all, he's gonna have 4 years of all NBA nods. He's gonna have six or seven All-Stars.
Okay, if he does all that, then yeah, sure.
Cause that's like what it is, like, if he keeps playing at this level, like, for all he has to do is two or three more seasons of this, and he's in the Hall of Fame. Like, it doesn't take much to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but I still feel like
I think you're overrating the Hall of Fame. Like, who the hell got in last year?
I don't know.
Chris Webber's in the Hall of Fame, right?
Come on, man. Chris Webber, the Basketball Hall of Fame counts everything, though. So Chris Webber being part of the Fab Five.
Yeah, but all the Michigan State stuff got taken down, remember?
Yeah, but come on. It's like relevance, right? Like, I think that's one of the things that does matter. Cause, like, you know.
Listen,
man. Also, like, Chris Webber was a better player than DeMar. Come on, man.
Let's look at DeMar's career 2 years from now. Yeah. He's got two finals MVPs, two championships, four All-NBA nods, six All-Star appearances. Come on, it's done.
Yeah. Listen, if people want to talk about Andre Iguodala as a fringe,
listen, as a fringe according Hall of Famer, to NBA Twitter, Kyle Korver is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, God.
Okay?
God. Oh, NBA Twitter. All right. Yeah, I don't know. I think he needs at least two more All-NBAs and, like, four more All-Stars in addition to this year. Like, if he ends up with four All-NBA and, like, you know, he's now a four-time All-Star, like, another four, like, eight. Like, he would have the Paul Pierce avenue, basically, without the championship.
Yeah.
Would you have put, like, Paul Pierce in the Hall of Fame without the championship?
Probably Paul Pierce makes it in.
Yeah.
In the same way, like, if Joe Johnson had four All-NBAs, he'd probably make the Hall of Fame.
Okay, is Joe Johnson going to make the Hall of Fame?
Not right now. He has no All-NBAs.
I mean, not right now. The man's 38 years old. Like, this is it. This is it for Jumbo Joe.
No, he's not going to make it. He has no All-NBAs, though.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. I'm still a little bit skeptical, though. I think that's when the relevancy thing is going to hurt him, DeMar, a little bit, but it is what it is. All right. Next one from Ben Scott. Will Siakam be more valuable than OG in a couple years? How have your thoughts on the Raptors prospect changed throughout the year?
What?
Yo, Siakam's not even more valuable than OG right now. Let's just say that.
Siakam's like 24. He's just still learning how to dribble, man. Please.
Hey, man. Siakam can dribble, all right? All he does, come on. Siakam can dribble.
He's got a high dribble, bro.
It's fine, man. He's moving so fast, like, you can't even swipe it. What have you seen Siakam get ripped? He hasn't.
Yeah, he clearly isn't ripped. Have you seen him? He's skinny as shit.
Yo, I'm not gonna lie. I got really concerned about Siakam when I watched them at Crown League this year, because he's getting worked over by Siobhan. Who was it? Siobhan Thompson? No, it wasn't Siobhan Thompson. No, Javon Shepherd. Yeah, that was like a 30-year-old Canadian basketball, like, you know, national team player, dominating Siakam. And I was like, wow, this could be an issue. But I mean, no, I think OG is the better player now. Although it's very close, and also going forward.
Like, OG's got more tools, man.
OG does have more tools, yeah.
Like, he has more tools. Like, the thing overall size and mobility, OG, like, he has more NBA tools than Siakam does.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, shooting is not the be-all and end-all, but, like, OG has shown for a while that he can shoot, whereas, like, you know, Siakam has shown that he can.
Like, Siakam's most useful when he's on the court with Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah. Those little shovel layups to Poeltl are great. I love those. They give me life.
Like, him and Poeltl have to be on the court at the same time for Siakam to have utility.
Yo, but honestly, though, shout out to Siakam and Poeltl for, like, they asked them about the Rising Stars Challenge snubs, which I don't care about. Whatever. Do you care about that? I mean, I feel like OG could have made it over, like, Buddy Hield, but, like, who cares? Or, like, Bogdan Bogdanovich.
I think the thing is, it's like, yo, you gotta give Sacramento something.
Yeah.
It's like, the crappy teams need something. Like, yo, Frank Ntilikina, like, why is he there? Who knows, but he's there.
Why is he there, man? Anyway, yeah, I mean, like, well, I didn't care, right? But they asked Poeltl about it, and Poeltl was like, whatever. He's like, I guess we have vacation. And then Poeltl's like, yeah, I'll probably be on vacation with Siakam. Yeah, why? I mean, honestly, they're just best friends, man. They're probably going to be out and, like, you know, taking a trip in Cuba or some shit. Like, you know, you have a good time, man. I'll see you guys there.
Now, those two are going to be at STC, bro. They're going to be at Yorkdale chopping it up, man.
Yo, but seriously though, where do Siakam and Pirtle chop girls? Because if they weren't basketball players, like they would 100% be at Scarborough Town Center.
Some photos with some Raptors. With his goofy ass smile, and people are just like, "Nah, we good."
Oh man, no, but seriously though, so those guys
they're on the street singing "O Canada" to people, bro.
That's true. That's true. Didn't that actually happen?
Yeah, that's like their. Like,
that was their rookie initiation, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Shout out. Next one from Darlene. Do you ever think DD and Kyle will ever stop with the ISO ball in the last? Okay, all right. I mean, chances are not so much. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's not really gonna happen like that. It's gonna take some time to like get it out of the system, trust players. I think other players have to, you know, come up with clutch moments. Like I think like they trust Van Vliet, for example. But it's because Van Vliet over the course of the season has proven himself to be an effective player in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, other players really haven't necessarily proven the same thing. I don't think they'll trust JV, for example. I think it's like the trusting is like selected based on who it is. Like, they just don't trust JV. Like, if you look at the way the team plays defense around JV, they're either like putting him like through way too much, or they're like over helping so that JV doesn't have to do anything.
I don't know how to answer this question. Like,
yeah, it's frustrating. Whatever, man. But listen, Damar just wants to become Kobe, and what does Kobe do but take very contested long twos?
Look, listen. Damar's just getting all the misses out of his system in the regular season. When he hits that fadeaway mid-range jumper over PJ Tucker in Game 7 of the NBA Finals,
God, no one's gonna watch that shit
for the championship. All right, then we're all gonna celebrate. It's gonna be lit.
Yeah. All right. And
that's gonna be his statue outside of their Canada Center. It'll be him over PJ Tucker.
Great. PJ Tucker, he deserves a statue too. The Unreal JTS, for all the recent close late finishes, are the Raptors actually learning things about how to handle clutch situations when everyone is watching?
And then he has this Drake gif.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
I don't get it, but
I think the Raptors are learning, yes. I think what Dwayne Casey is saying is good, and he's what he's telling the team is good. It's just they have to break some habits. They really do. And, you know, they ultimately just have to make some shots. If they made some shots, nobody would be talking about how they played in the fourth quarter. That's it. And, of course, obviously things go into them making shots for sure. But, you know, it's a make or miss league, Doug.
Yeah.
It's a make or miss league, Doug.
That said, I think I trust the Raptors' other pieces more. Like, CJ, if DeMar and Kyle start moving the ball more, I trust Serge. CJ.
I don't really trust Serge.
Fred VanVleet. No. Let me finish. Okay. I trust these guys more than Patrick Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
So I think at some point it's going to improve.
Bro, remember when Patrick Patterson got that steal and then he took that mid-range jumper? He, like, did the ball fake and Darren Williams flew by him and he hit it. And then I'm sure Pat watched, like, three movies that night. Woo! Yeah. Drake night,
and then
baby.
Remember in the playoffs when all he had to do was hit two free throws and he missed them?
Yeah, well, come on, man. Why gotta bring up old stuff, man? Why gotta bring up old stuff? Pat is doing great out there in OKC. Not really.
Get them zeros, baby. Get them zeros.
Oh, baby, he's gonna be with the starting lineup with Roberson out.
Oh, man, it's gonna be great.
Okay, next one from Rexington Ruthless. With JV playing at a high level, I'm assuming he just missed a word, would you move him now while valuable? Dude, what's up with the punctuation of this? I'm a little bit confused on this one. Any players on bottom teams, quote-unquote Memphis, worth looking at for a playoff run?
Nah.
I don't think
you move JV at all.
If you move JV, you have to bring back a big center. So he's exactly. saying, like, would you trade JV for Gasol?
Gasol, which, like, nah.
Okay.
Like, because honestly, I think Gasol has a season left.
Yeah.
Because, like, his defense kind of – the thing is he's on a crappy team, so you can't even tell.
You can't even tell, but he's also just not finishing well. I mean, like.
Also, like, yo, the Gasol brothers, as nice as they are and people, they're like assholes.
Are they?
Like, yo, like, I was a Laker fan throughout that whole time with Powell, but yo, he wasn't. He needs his minutes.
Yeah.
He needs his touches. Or he'll throw a hissy fit. And the only reason it's working in San Antonio is because Pop was like, yo, you're 37 now. Please come off the bench.
Please look in the mirror. You're Powell Gasol. All right.
So yeah, I do. I'm a little skeptical of Mark and Pau as locker room guys.
Mm.
So I wouldn't, like, mid season. I wouldn't add them.
Yeah, there was another question also with the trading JV. But, I mean, like, honestly, trading JV right now for salary relief doesn't quite make sense because as constructed, the team does need JV to do, you know,
yeah, because, like, the thing is this team, like, there are certain pieces you need to have. Like, the thing that JV gives you is, like, anytime another team has bigs, mm-hmm. you basically have the best you can pull out the best offensive weapon. If the other team has bigs they have to play, then you put JV out there and dominate them.
Yeah.
So it's like you have this weapon that you can keep. At the minimum, he's going to play 15 minutes in a game. At most, he's going to play like 25, 30.
Yeah, and but he's like a nice little counter game, you can use. Yeah, I mean,
so, like, he's legitimately a weapon, and he adds versatility, so there's no real reason to get rid of him, other than, like, if you can get a much better player.
Yeah, which, realistically, how are you going to do that, you know? Like, you're not just going to flip him for a better player, like, JV is what he is. No, you can just expect, you can just hope JV can play well, which, you know, he does well in the playoffs, so, like, well, he mostly does well in the playoffs. I don't think he did well in last year's playoffs, but whatever. Karn Sharma asks, what three new NBA jerseys just dropped would you rock? So, that's odd. Which three NBA jerseys? It doesn't have to be just Raptors.
The new City ones?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Actually, no. Listen, I know whatever, the Chinese New Year stuff, but, like, I would, if someone really out there really loves me, like, please buy me the Toronto Raptors. Or not Toronto Raptors, Golden State Warriors, City jerseys. Which other Chinese New Year's jerseys? Those things look sick. They actually had, like, the Chinese, like, dragon, or I'm not sure if it's dragon or tiger, but or lion, but one of those things. It just looks great. It's a great design.
Yo, number one, okay, so for the City jerseys, number one's got to be the Miami one. Like, that one's absolute money.
Okay, yeah.
The Miami one's good. The Laker one isn't bad. OKC's trash. I think Sacramento had a good one, but it won't load for me right now. Mm. Oh, the Rip City one looks good, actually.
The Rip City one.
The Portland one. But I think their shorts are whack. Spurs looks trash.
Yeah, well, the Spurs are always Knicks some sort of trash. Like military.
Denver's boring as hell. The Raptors North jerseys are nice. I don't mind them. Really, the one jersey I really like, which are actually hideous as hell, but I enjoy them for personal. If anybody out there wants to get me those Minnesota highlighter green Pakistan National Cricket Team jerseys.
You want that.
Bro. Yo, go to the Raptors fans out there. Go Google search. Pakistan National Cricket Team 1992 World Cup.
Okay.
And tell me those aren't the exact same jerseys.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I just want that jersey for that specific purpose.
All right, let's race to the last couple because I'm trying to make sure we get to we're doing this call and then we're pretty much just gonna hop on transit and get over to have dinner. Killa Pascal says, "What do you expect to change between now and the end of the season, CJ's role and minutes, Norm's role and minutes? I mean, basically, what do you expect to change?"
I think we're going to start seeing more CJ with the starting lineups in the fourth.
Hopefully.
Because I feel like that's what the playoff look is going to be. Mm. It's going to be more CJ with, like, the real guys. I feel like at some point in February and March when, like, the seeding gets more settled out, that's when Norm's going to get more of a chance to really start becoming an NBA player again. Because the hope is you just get Norm well enough so that he can at least play bench minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's about it. Other than that, I think everybody else has their role.
True. Another one from Killa Pascal. What's the best way to get Norm out of his slump? The Raptors have to, I think Masai needs to sit down with Norm and just, like, make everything clear and, like, calm his mind and have one of those, like, you remember when Masai had that talk with Kyle Lowry and was like, listen, you could be a $1 million player, a $2 million player, or a $30 million player because no one else wants to pay you, but we want to save face and keep you.
Yeah.
he had that talk with Lowry and it helped, you know, spark a change in his career. I'm not saying it was that simple, but, you know, like, that helps to have, like, you know, the top leader of the organization show faith and confidence in you. And they've already done that with the money, but, you know, just to reiterate.
And they thing. Already, like, dedicated a whole episode of Open Court or Open Gym.
Literally just to cheering him up. Like,
literally, hey. they interviewed our friends, like, what do you think about Norm? Oh, well, he's great. He'll be back.
He's a good friend. Yeah. He always lets you pick again if you end up with the Memphis Grizzlies in NBA 2K. Nobody wants to play with Memphis Grizzlies in 2K, alright? That team has no talent. And I'm sorry, Marc Gasol can't do stuff in that game.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that though, because Nick Reynolds? Yeah, Nick Reynoldson.
Yeah.
Talking Raptors, he whooped somebody to ass with the Memphis Grizzlies.
That's true.
Their 2K challenge.
That's
so
true. Shouts to you listening to all the pods.
Yeah, yo.
That one's the must listen.
That's a good pod, man. Plus they shouted me out.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Oh, yeah. They described you as almost like, you know, a brown Kevin Durant.
Yeah, man. I'm a mythical figure.
You're really just a brown CJ Miles, but you know, but whatever. That day you look like brown Kevin Durant. Another one from Killer Pascal. And also I think like just it'd be great to like give Norm like a big shot in one of these games when like they rest somebody too. I think just like
the game where they rest DeMar. They put him in the starting lineup and let him go.
Yes, I want him in the starting lineup. And like just for one game tell him like, look, we'll live and die with your whatever, and if you continue to play like the way you are, like we're gonna lose that game by 50, but just go out there and do whatever you gotta do.
Like really, would you be against seeing like games where they rest DeMar, Kyle, and Serge and they just play like OG4 and they bring up like Malcolm Miller and Bruno at the end of the season?
Yeah, they better bring up Jerry Stackhouse to coach that game.
We're resting Casey for the playoffs.
Yo, resting Dwayne Casey. Dwayne, you
also, it's gonna be awesome because Casey's gonna be coaching the opposite team, eh? For the All-Star.
That's true.
So he's just gonna call, he's gonna be like, okay, just trap the ball.
Yeah, Dwayne Casey's like, man, listen, I'm so happy to not have to coach these guys.
Every time DeMar touches it, trap.
Make him dribble with his left. Can't do it. I'm looking at this game right here, alright? Tuesday, March 6th, the Raptors are playing the Atlanta Hawks. The next day is a back-to-back against the Detroit Pistons. Rest them. Rest all
both
those guys.
Both games.
Both games, yeah, whatever. Whatever, who cares? Who cares? Forget the one seed, man. And then last one, for Paul Singh. This one I loved. Why aren't we going after Dwight Howard? This is from Paul Singh, whose handle is at Paul, S-I-N, 90308053. So first off, there's not that many Paul Sins that you have to go like.
There's a lot of Paul Sins.
Okay, eight digits.
That's probably his student ID, man. He has zero followers and followings, man.
And he has one tweet. He made his account specifically to ask us. That's why are we going after Dwight Howard? He made his whole account to do this.
Okay, I'll give you the easy answer. Serge is going through a slump, and he really doesn't need more competition off the court.
Oh, come on, bro. Come on, man. Yeah. All right, that's the podcast. Asad, thank you for coming on, as always.
All right, man. Follow See you in Hamdi's.
Yeah, listen. Did we say 6:30?
Yeah, 6:30. I'm going to get there for 6:45.
All right. Follow Asad on Twitter at SwarLasers. That's about it.
Yeah, that's really about it.
Okay. And, thank you to all of you guys for listening. We'll be back.
Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar. With no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report limitations apply.
The available AKG 36 speaker sound system in the Cadillac Escalade provides 360-degree sound, so you hear studio sound on the road. The 2021 Cadillac Escalade, never stop arriving.